the principle or practice of unselfish concern for or devotion to the welfare of others. Let's open the panel with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Our first speaker is Keith G. from Las Vegas. He will be reading pages 109 and 110 from the 12 and 12. Woo! Ow!
Woo! Keith, alcoholic.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, what's that thing you guys do? Wacky? Wacky?
Hi, Keith.
Hi, Keith.
We love you, Keith.
Lots and lots and lots. Whole bunches.
Huh.
I like that.
Yeah. This comes out of the 12 and 12. Now, what about the rest of the 12 step? The wonderful energy it releases and the eager action by which it carries our message to the next suffering alcoholic, and which finally translate the 12 steps into action upon all our affairs as the payoff, the magnificent reality of Alcoholics Anonymous. Even the newest of newcomers finds undreamed rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic, the one who is even blinder than he. This is indeed the kind of giving that actually demands nothing. He does not expect his brother suffer to pay him, or even to love him. And then he discovers that by the divine paradox of this kind of giving, he has found his own reward, whether his brother has yet received anything or not. His own character may still be gravely defective, but he somehow knows that God has enabled him to make a mighty beginning, and he senses that he stands at the edge of the new mysteries, joys, and experiences of which he had never even dreamed. Practically every AA member declares that no satisfaction has been deeper and no joy greater than a 12-step job well done. To watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from darkness into light. To see their lives quickly filled with new purpose and meaning. To see whole families reassembled. To see the alcoholic outcast received back into his community in full citizenship. And above all, to watch these people awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives. These things are the substance of what we receive as we carry AA's message to the next alcoholic. That almost chokes me up. I think it did. What is it, AJ? 23 minutes a person?
Well, we're down about 20 now.
20 now? All right. It's always nice to have somebody with OCD and the control freaks, you know? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I honor Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I read, my sponsors, it's an old AA guy from Cleveland, and he used to tell me, he'd say, the big book is the text, and the 12 and 12 is the workbook. Some people may disagree, but that guy saved my life. So there's not a lot I disagree with him. And through that man doing what we do, I got to wake up from the dead. And he told me early on, as I just read, this is where people wake up from the dead. This is where kids get their parents back. This is where relationships are healed. These are sacred grounds. And over the years, I don't know, you know, I used to, as a new person, and I love the new guys, you know, the guys I work with, because I remember my dad died in August, and I had a guy call, and I said, you know, it was coming, and it wasn't the big deal, but my dad died, and I'm trying to get him placed here, and his body's still there, and his wife's still, you know, holding on to him, and I'm the oldest, and it always seems to be on me to take care of business, and one of my guys called me, and I said, you know what, buddy, are you okay? Like, is it life or death? My dad just passed, and I got to handle this. He goes, okay, I get it, but I got to talk to you real quick about this, you know? And I actually started laughing, because that's how we are. And I get that with my guys, because that's the way I was. And I go to the sponsor every night, and we'd sit down right before the meeting, and he would say, what's going on? And da-da-da, and I'd give him da-da-da-da, you know? And then he'd kind of say something to me and then dismiss me to go to a meeting. And one night I walked in, and he put that big hand in front of my face, like, don't even say anything.
And he pointed to a guy over in the corner, and he said, go talk to that guy. He just got here. Just got here. And I said, what did I say to him? He says, go talk to him, and don't tell him anything about yourself. Go ask him how he's doing. And I sat there for about 3 hours with this guy, and by the end of the evening, we'd wind up out the porch of the old Triangle Club on Annie Oakley. He's smoking a cigarette. I'm kind of scared because I'm going home by myself. I've already been hooked up with you guys. And he said, so what'd you want to talk to me about? I said, I don't remember. And I got it. Mm-hmm. And I got it. And from that point on, from that day on, that's all we did. And it was take that guy to detox, go do this, stay busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get here and somebody will say, you know, I'm feeling real depressed. You know, I feel real bad. And I feel, you know, and where I got sober was your feelings don't matter. But you know what? If you spend the majority of your life doing dope, drinking, trashed everybody, burned the world to the ground, you might be a little depressed when you get here. Now you had all that dope on top of it. And when I say dope, we know what we're talking about. We're alcohol and drugs. You know, I love this conference because, you know, I walked in that room the other night, and I knew people, there was alcoholics in that room, but I had this little bit of a feeling there might be some drug addicts in the room. You know what I mean? And you know, when I got in, man, I gotta segue off for a second, because when I got here in 1985, if you were sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there'd be an old guy, if you were running your mouth about dope, they'd stop you. Take that down the road, go to the other program. And we don't do that anymore. People are dying. We got young people dying from this dope that's going on out there. So I've got some friends that are kind of purists, and they don't like the chanting, and they don't like this, they don't like that. I'm full of the energy here this weekend. I'll tell you honest, I can't sit through all your meetings. I mean, a lot of noise. But you know what? When I got here at 27 years old in 1985, there was nothing like this. I had to go buddy up with the old guys. And they talked a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous. We didn't talk about dope. And I got young kids all around me. And at 16 years old, when you burn your life to the ground, and we tell you to stop hanging out with your playgrounds and playmates, and you're going to high school, and you got kids on your street, where do you go? So I had to do that because I called a couple of my purest buddies, and I said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, not even just coming over here and letting people see and just showing your support for what we're doing. Because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, I don't know where I was going. So you burn out, you burn the world to the ground. Now you got to detox. And what happens is, as my friend who's sitting in the hospital this weekend, and he's 33 years sober, he's on his second knee replacement, and the first knee replacement went like that, and the second one didn't go well at all. Didn't. And I went over there, he was in a panic. Bad panic. Kind of panic where you beat people up in the hospital and you rip all the tubes out. And he was doing that. And you know what? I have experience with that because I'm like that. And I don't do real well on the dope. And this is regular dope that a doctor gave him under anesthesia, under general anesthesia for a surgery. And when I walked in the room, I heard him on the phone and walked in the room, there was fear in his face. And he looked at me and he goes, what's going on? I said, it's the dope. It's the dope. That's one alcoholic standing up for another. That's one alcoholic being able to tell another alcoholic what you're going through is okay. What you're going through is what you gotta do. You can't get that on the outside. What you guys did for me coming into Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. What you're gonna do, kids, you're gonna feel this, 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 and this. And here's what we do. We do this, 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 and this. And by your experience, by your hope, by what transformed in your life, and you had the same story as me, I went, okay. There was men in this room when I looked around. I said, I would have drank with that guy. That's what you do when you're sober. I would have hung out with him. You know, if you're a pig like me, I would have drank with anybody that was buying. But the bottom line is, I've heard that message of hope. This is what happens. Here's the best part. I have this thing. There's no bad examples in here. There's good examples. That's what we're doing here in this conference, in this room. There's great examples. Tim, you know, I mean, great examples. I mean, the guys that are going out there that are doing it on their own. The guys that are going out there, and I can pull this off. I don't have to do exactly what you're doing. My early sobriety was, you know, I'm going to do what you guys are doing, but I'm not getting a sponsor because nobody's telling me what to do. I was so sick in Alcoholics Anonymous for about 5 months, it was bad. Until the old guy, my sponsor, the same one I got today, tapped me on the shoulder one night after a meeting. He said, hey, kid, I'm going to sponsor you because you ain't going to make it like you're doing it. You know, when a guy comes in and says, I don't want nothing you guys got. I don't want to be near you guys. Leave me alone, this and that. We understand. Come on. You know, my favorite. How much time I got left? Come on, control freak.
About 10 minutes.
Okay. My favorite new sober, and I see this all the time. This is the story for me. My favorite is I'm sitting in a meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I feel safe. It's like the boat. My favorite is the boat. The ocean liner sunk. We're all in the boat. You know, it's drizzling. It's night. Sharks are circling the boat. There's no land in sight. Somebody like Steve's maybe singing Kumbaya, you know. And everything's okay at this moment. And somebody gets up on the bow and says, I think I can make it. And we try to stop him. No, don't go. And he goes. And if he's fortunate to get back here, you're always missing something. You ever notice that? Your freedom, the car, the family. We know a guy missing an arm. You're missing something. But we'll pull you back in the boat, and there's not a lot of, we'll bust chops a little bit, but there's not a lot of, that's what happens. Sit down, have a cup of coffee. Get on the horse and ride again. No judgment. No judgment. Come on. You know, that's my story, because when I would come in here, I'd feel real safe with you guys. Real safe. And I feel really part of. You guys were talking about the way I felt. I never knew how I felt. I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what to do with it. I heard my story from each of you. And I heard a little bit over here and a little bit over here, and that's my story. So I'm feeling good. Here's my alcoholism. I got to get out of here. I got to go. And the meeting ends, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at the door. How am I going to get away from these guys? And as all the guys get up and we're going to Denny's and we're going to IHOP and we're going to go have pie and we're going to go this, and I'm like, no more. And as I'm starting to walk out, the guys are moving in a herd and they got me with them. And I'm trying to get to the right or the left. And I go, I got to go. And come on, kid. And then one guy leans over and he says, I got you covered. Because they know I got no money. I got you covered. And as we're moving to the car, I finally stop and I says, you don't understand. I got to go. And the one guy said, where are you going? I got to feed the dogs. And they said, get in the car. And I says, you guys really don't understand. Here's my pitch. Here's my pleading. You guys don't understand. I'm a loner. And they said all at once, so are we. Get in the freaking car. You know, they knew exactly where I'm at. When they put me in the car, then we go to Denny's, and then we get a big booth, and they put me in the middle of the booth, and they got two or three guys on either side. I can't get out. They won't even let me take my own car. 26 years later, you know what my pitch is? Get in the car. Get in the boat. Don't get out of the boat. It's, you know, the same thing that I heard from those old guys 30, 60, 90 days sober, the same things that are working today. And here's the deal, what we're talking about this weekend. When I start my day off and I think about you, and it happens throughout the day, I think about you more than me, life is good. Now, the me slips back in here and there, but if I'm going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm on the phone, I love the phone. You know, when I got here, the guys used to drop quarters on the table. You know, years before that, it was dimes and nickels. There wasn't no cellular phones. When the guys showed up with cellular phones, they were like bricks. You know, we all got these phones. They tape quarters in your big book. It was powerful. And when I'm thinking about you more than me, everything's perfect. And you guys have taught me how to live that life. You know, you guys taught me how to go to work. You know, you guys taught me. Outdoorsman, good to see you. Were you late?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. I don't want to dime you out or anything. As he taught me early on, help that guy. You know, one night I take a guy, he tells me to take a guy to detox. I take a guy to detox, and I stop, and I've got minimal money on me, and the guy's hungry. So I take him to 7-Eleven, or I buy him a whatever at 7-Eleven. And he gets in this little car, and we're going down the freeway, and he starts to get sick. I said, please don't get sick. And I got roll-up windows on this little piece of shit stuff I'm driving. And he throws up out the window, and it goes back and hits me in the face. And I wanted to beat him. Yeah, I wanted to beat him. Yeah. I mean, when you walk through the vomit and the insanity and you're sitting in detox. Well, I love the one where I used to go to detox and I take a guy into detox and they wouldn't take him. He's got to go to UMC. He's medically messed up. So I'm thinking I get him to UMC, I'm done. So the next day I go in to see my sponsor. He goes, how'd that go? I said, oh, he's bad. What happened? I had to take him to UMC. They wouldn't take him. Then what happened? You know, and I won't lie to the old guy. I said, why didn't you stay? Well, why didn't you stay? Well, I'm done. And that's the same way I work with the guys. It's nothing that was done with me I don't do with the other guys. Turn your thoughts to others. It happened for me on the job, you know, same way. You know, I went there to be of service and I got this job early on that was, I was taking people to detox every day. You know, I drive down the road and I started to weep. I started to well up. And I remember the last time I cried before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 10 years old. I can't remember when I started crying around here whether I cried for 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 years. It just wouldn't stop. And there was no shame amongst you men going through that. There was no shame. I mean, you guys were tough on me, but you mean you held me tight. And I've learned the same thing. I know some of the guys think I'm kind of tough, but you know what? Here's the deal. We have a lot of fun in here, but this is life or death. We're dying in here every day. We lost a guy in our group last week. You know, a guy went in and out, pay the cab. So taxi cab authority arrested him. He decided he wanted to fight the police in jail. That's a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love cop fighters. And he died. And he died in CCDC. That's our story. How much time?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. Do you think I can make that? Anyway, that's it for me. I'm just glad to see you guys. And you know what? When anybody puts a hand to AA, you want it to be there. They keep it so simple around here. So simple. And then when anybody asks you to do something around here, it's the best when you go up to somebody and you say, hey, we're going to go do this, this, and this. And they go, you can't say no. You can't say no. You know, you guys saved my life. If I was in Alcoholics Anonymous another 100 years, I couldn't begin to repay back to you what you did for me. I learned how to raise my kids. I learned how to go to work. And for that, I got to help somebody else. And when I was sitting in the meeting yesterday, and my food's there, and I'm ready for a great Friday meeting in our men's stag meeting, I get this call from my friend with 33 years in the hospital. And as soon as I heard his voice, I knew the beast, I call it the beast, was knocking. And the dope had him. So here, I'll tell you this, shut up. So as I'm walking out, I go to the charge nurse because he really, really had a hard time. And I go to the charge nurse and he's full of blood. You know, where he pulled out the tubes and everybody wanted to, they were looking at his room like it was radioactive. You know, alcoholics are the best when we really lose it, you know, because we can take a whole hospital, a whole police department. We can hold hostages. You know, I love that. And I said, listen, this guy down here is my friend for 26 years. He's an old Navy retired guy. He's a wonderful man. Doesn't drink, doesn't drug, doesn't anything. And he had a reaction. And here's my number. Here's my name. I can calm him down. We're very close. Call me. Now, when I give that number out in Alcoholics Anonymous, that doesn't mean call me between 8 and 4. That means the phone's on all night and I'm ready to go. So she said to me with the hardness of the hospital look, she calmed down and she looked at me and she goes, he was unbelievable last night. The guy had a knee replacement, and 2 hours later he pulls everything out, and they go in the room and he took off his gown. He's 70 some odd years old, he's naked, and he wants to fight. That's my guy. That's my guy. So the bottom line, here's what the problem is for poor Jerry. I have new material for Jerry for many, many years.
Uh-huh.
Jerry's done. You know. So I love you guys. I love Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thanks, Keith. Thank you, Keith. It says that right here. So I'm supposed to say thank you. So thank you. Our next speaker is Ivan M. from Las Vegas. He will be reading pages 255 and 256 from AA Comes of Age.
Ivan.
It's 30 minutes?
Get out your Kleenex.
Whatever you want.
Oh, 20 minutes. I'm setting my timer.
And I got my watch right here. My name's Ivan. I'm an alcoholic.
Ivan.
Really, really glad.
Oh. Awesome.
Thank you, guys. I love you, too. This is from AA Comes of Age. It's if you don't know what that book is, get it. If you've never read it, get it. It changed my life. It changed my sobriety. It's an unbelievable book. This is a passage from a speech by Sam Shoemaker, who was, for all intents and purposes, Bill's sponsor. So here I go. There is a great hue and cry today on the part of some people about those who seek benefits from God. I would like to know where in heaven's name a bewildered and defeated person is going to go for the help he desperately needs if he doesn't go to God for it. Of course he's concerned about himself. He can't help it. He ought to be. He must be if he's ever going to be made useful to other people. But later on, he must grow up and stop just using God and begin to ask God to use him. Stop asking God to do what he wants and begin to try and find out what it is that God wants. Many people tell me they have given up faith. They have prayed for something they wanted and didn't come. And either there's no God or else he has no interest in them. What childish nonsense. How can anybody expect to acquiesce in half-baked prayers that a lot of us send up to him? He would have the whole world in worse chaos than it is now in 5 minutes. Real prayer is not telling God what we want. It is putting ourselves at his disposal so that he can tell us what he wants. Prayer is not trying to get God to change his will. It is trying to find out what his will is, to align ourselves, to realign ourselves with his purpose for the world and for us. That's why it is important for us to listen as well as talk when we pray. That's why it's good to begin these meetings with silence. Oftentimes we come feverishly and willfully, and we just have to quiet down before God can do anything for us. While our own voices are clamorous and demanding, there is no place for the voice of God. Till our own clamorous, demanding voices quiet down, we cannot hear the voice of God. When we let willfulness cool out of us, God can get his will across to us and as far as we need to see ahead of us. Dante said, in his will is our peace. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Like I said, I'm an alcoholic. I read that because it really best captures what my full circle in Alcoholics Anonymous and in my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, my journey in finding God in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my journey in finding that thing that I needed so that I could never get loaded again. Because this is the way Ivan operates. Like I always tell every guy I work with, I have to find something that feels better than a drink or a drug. I have to find something that touches me deeper and greater than a drink or a drug. You can't sit me down and intellectualize my disease out of me. You can't. You can't sit me down and say, hey, listen, drugs and alcohol are bad, they're ruining your life, stop it. It's not going to happen. And even in the same vein, as blasphemous as it sounds, when I knew and you sit me down and we go through the book, you're still giving me ideas. You're still giving me ideas. And the way I always contrast that is the first time I smoked crack, the first time I got loaded, no one sat me down and said, hey, listen, before we hit this pipe, we're going to talk about this. All right? All right? I want you to write down what you think is going to happen. Right? This is what we're going to do. I didn't care. I'm an emotionally based creature. If you don't give me something I can feel, Because logic is not my problem. Understanding has never been an issue for me. I've never been accused of being an idiot, ever. But what governs me is my soul. That's what governs me. And if you don't speak to that, you can't communicate with me. You don't understand me. And that's how I function. So when I drink and use and drugs and alcohol destroy my life and my relationship with my mom, and I ruin all those things, and I get to that place where I hate myself, and I don't ever think I'll ever get sober again, and I'm a chronic relapser, and I went in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know what it is to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and want sobriety and not get it, and hear about talk about a God and an idea that you can't buy. I can't buy the idea of your God. I can't. But I'll tell you what's working is a bag of dope. As much as it hurts, as much as it takes away, I understand that because it speaks to my soul. And these ideas you're selling me aren't getting to my soul. The point I'm making is it's only a series of actions that do that because they give me that experience. And when I have that, understanding be damned. I don't care. I don't understand how a shot of whiskey works. But I'll tell you what, after I take it, oh,
there it is. And every problem I have prior to that is gone. And that thing that I've been searching for my entire life, I found. Because it was never about drugs or alcohol. It was about a sense of contentment, where I'm okay with myself and the world around me, with who and what I am and what everything is. That sense of contentment. That's what I've always been looking for. And I just altruism, time, all of that. For me, that's how God drove an 18-wheeler into the middle of my soul. You know what I mean? I never bought any of this until I helped someone else. I never bought any of this until I helped someone else. None of this made sense until I tried to give it away. And that's how God wowed me. And that's how God proved to me and gave me that experience that rivaled the effect produced by drugs and alcohol. Because when I got here, my sponsor told me, I'd go, hell no. You must have done some bad dope, dog. I swear to God. Nothing feels better than some good ecstasy. Nothing. Nothing. But here's what happened. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and eventually I get sober. And before I get sober, my sponsor, Dave, tells me that, Ivan, there's something in you worth saving. Ivan, there's something in you worth saving. Because the way I am when I get here is that I just want to believe I'm capable of good again. And really what I want above all else from Alcoholics Anonymous is to come to believe that. And when I come here, that seems miraculous, and that seems impossible. And it borders on, it equals the same promise that drugs and alcohol gave me. Because when I first took a pill of ecstasy, it changed everything. It changed everything. It made me okay with the world. It gave me that emotional payoff that the world had promised me that it couldn't give me. That it absolutely couldn't give me. And my sponsor told me it's a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual thing. I'm like, I don't buy this spiritual BS. I honestly don't. And he worked with me real well. And for me, he broke it down and said, okay, if spiritually you have all these other ideas attached to spiritual, but let's just find spiritual simply as this. And I'd relapse all the time. And a lot of times I'd go to PTs and I'd be drinking all these normal people, and then eventually I'd come to that point, you know what I mean, where we're like two pitchers in, and then they all start falling one by one, you know what I mean? Oh, I've got work tomorrow, I'm drinking water, you know, I've got the babysitter, I've got all these things, and da-da-da. The bottom line is all the people I drink with, all the people I get high with, the world had a reason to offer them to get up from that table. But three pitchers in, the world has nothing to offer a creature like me to go home. Nothing. DUI, I don't give a shit. I'll go to jail. You know what I mean? Job, I lose them. My mom, I destroy that. Give me something. Give me something. Give me something that the world could give me to make me get off that table. Nothing. Nothing. Not a creature like me. Nothing. And Dave goes, okay, well then, whatever it'll take to get you from that table, but if the world can't give it to you, we'll call that spiritual. We don't know what it is. But heaven knows you need it. And if you don't believe it, you better hope there's something there, kid. You better hope there's something there. And whatever that thing is that the world can't give me, that I found, that allows me to get off that table, the main vehicle for that has been altruism. That's how I've come to believe. That's how I've come to believe that this can work for me. That's how I've gone those experiences that rival the effect produced by drugs and alcohol. And so eventually I get sober and I start working with guys, and bit by bit I slowly came to believe. I
I start working with this guy, and he relapses, and one time he calls me over to the apartment. The wife calls him at 3 in the morning, and he's in DTs, and I'm barely 6 months sober. I've just moved out of the halfway house, and I run over there at 2 in the morning, and he's in the corner shaking. His belly's distended. He's out of his mind, and we go on the porch to smoke a cigarette, and then he's going in and out. Eventually, he just grabs me. He goes, Ivan, how do you do it? How do you do it? How can I stay sober? Eventually, I'm going to get healthy, and I'm going to feel better. I'm going to drink again. How do you do it? How do you do it? How do you do it?
And I had to dig real, real deep to answer him. I had to dig real, real deep to answer him. And then somewhere in the process of trying to describe to him the miracle that I had found, it became real to me. It became real to me. It's as if my God knows that until I try to give it to you, I'll never truly treasure it. I'll never truly treasure it. Ever. Ever. And then eventually that guy gets sober, and his family, and they have a child, and they invite me over, and I get to hold this baby, and through the eyes of this child, I find my forgiveness. I come to believe that I'm capable of good, and slowly over time, through all the guys I've gotten help, bit by bit, they've all given me a piece of my soul back, a piece of my soul back, because I never thought I could ever forgive myself, ever, ever. But I'll tell you what, man, there's nothing more exciting than a guy coming out of detox. He's got a job interview, and you go to Walmart, and you buy him a shirt and a pair of shorts. And he goes to Walmart, and he gets that job, and he sits in the car, and he goes, Ivan, thank you, man, thank you, thank you. And then a couple of later, he moves out of the halfway house. And it, honestly, on the deepest level, man, on the deepest level, I equate it to that thing that got me from that table. Because this is what it feels like picture Cape Canaveral, right? This fucking spaceship, it's all there, right? And for me, it's like God's saying, hey, Ivan, I got a seat on a miracle. You want it? Like, I'm all in. I'm all in. And I'm all in. Because eventually the guy moves out of the halfway house, and he gets a job, and he gets a life together, and his family invites you over, and you get to see his life come together. You get to feel like it's the greatest honor you can be given. The greatest honor you can be given. And like I said, one dude had his 1 year, man. It's like seeing a shooting star, bro. It's like seeing a shooting star and feeling like the heavens have chosen this lowly crackhead piece of shit and paid me the greatest honor I could ever have been given. And as I forgive myself, as I find myself again, and I start to believe that there's something in me worth saving, I find my miracle. Because through the eyes of all those guys, the way they look at me, and the way they treat me, and the way I interact with them, as crazy and as insane as I can be, when I interact with them, and I love them, and I care about them, and they call me, and they say, Ivan, I don't know what to do. And the minute they say that, I don't know what to do. And I go, bro, I love you. And I pray to that God, and words come out of me that I didn't have. That I didn't have. And in that moment, it's the best of me. It's the best of me. The best of me. And many, I'm a crazy, I'm vain, I'm prideful, I'm all those things, I'm out of my mind. And some days my disease circles. The world, they circle, and it tries to drive me insane. It says, Ivan, you suck, you piece of shit, you won't stop failing, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And in those moments, and I've had many of them, many of them. And in those moments, it's like, I love, you know that scene in Lord of the Rings? When, The spider is about to kill Frodo. You know, like it's like this big monster is about to kill Frodo. And he pulls out that little light, right? He pulls out just that little light. And it backs up. And it backs up. And he can't fuck with him. It sounds insane, but in my soul, in my heart, I promise you, when the darkness of my failings as a human being seem to overcome me, the only thing I can hold on to is all those guys. And I can tell my disease, I'm not that bad, because I was a part of this miracle, I was a part of that miracle. He went back to school, he got his mother back, he's a part of his family, and no matter what you say, there's good in me, there's good in me, there's good in me. You know what I mean? And that's how I've come to believe, and that's what you have to offer a guy like me, because I truly believe Alcoholics Anonymous is epic and full of miracles, man. It is up. It's like I always joke, like I get to work on Monday, like, Ivan, how was your weekend? It's pretty cool. Watch a soul get rebuilt, witness miracles. Usual. You know what I mean? That was about it. Not much else going on, bro. But I love working with new guys. I live for working with new guys. That's all I do. That's all I love to do. I can't take enough phone calls. I can't give enough rides. I can't go enough places.
I moved out of Silk Road House and I got a car, man. I'm on the lot. I've got my first car in sobriety. And I'm nervous because God has gotten me sober and I'm getting a car. And for me, it's all tied into, I'm going to go back. And it got ingrained in my soul, man, that the way you don't go back is you so, like, God surround you. If I want to bring God into my life, I use new guys because I truly believe. My God tells me, you're no use to me. Ivan, you have no use to me on your knees. Of no use to me. I can't help you on your knees. I'm not an idea, Ivan. I'm kinetic. For a creature like you whose ideas have never worked, who's soul powered, who's governed by what he feels and loves, go to what you feel and love. You can't do that in your own home. You can't do that talking about yourself. Go to those kids. Go to those guys. Wipe the tears off your face. Suck your shit up cold and ask him how he's doing. And then I'll find you. But I can't find you alone, kid. I can't. Socialism is everything for me. I have no God without it. No God without it. All I'll do is just wander around in my own insanity. You know what I mean? I probably should shut up soon, but I love cheesy, insane metaphors. And then the one I've heard that works the best is, like, I get sober, right? And my soul is dark. And it's black. And I hate myself. And I hate my life. And I've burned and destroyed everything I ever loved. And I get this magic miracle to where I believe I can get sober. Maybe I can get sober. And it's like God brings this 18-wheeler full of all this good shit. But it's locked. I don't want to jump up there and get up. Yeah, God, let's go open it. I want to see what type of good shit you got in store for me. Yes, yes, yes. And God goes, stop. I cannot rebuild your soul if you're looking. What I need you to do is go out there, get your hands dirty, rebuilding another soul. And while you're doing that, me and someone else will unpack your shit. And that's my miracle. While I wasn't looking, and it'll always be while I'm not looking. You know what I mean? And to anyone who's new, if any of this doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. Just care about someone other than you, and I promise you, you'll find everything you ever needed. And I promise, if you're anything like me, my God has used the vehicle of the love I've found for other people to not only rebuild my soul, but to really give me a chance to care about other people. And as a result, I've found everything I've ever been looking for. I love things like this. I love these roundups. I love them. I love long people's fellowships. I love it. I cannot get enough because my disease is one of loneliness. And I am the guy that holds up in rooms with a pipe and a bottle and cries because I have so much love in my heart and I can't get it out. Because through my actions, I chase everyone away. And I have not forgotten what it's like to be in that desert of loneliness. So to be in a moment like this, at a conference like this, surrounded by all my friends, and wonder, why am I so fortunate? And God, how can I repay you? Because I don't deserve this. I don't deserve this. God simply goes, you know what to do, kid. How many newcomers you got on your phone? Do you keep your phone on all night? Huh? You know what I mean? And that's it. And it's like I always say when I share, like, I picture God and his angels, right, are walking around. Blah, da, 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 da. And then there's like the cesspool of drunks and alcoholics, right? And he's just dying. And one of them's Ivan. And God goes, save him. Yep, Ivan, that's him. Give him everything a person could ever want. Make him believe in himself again. Make him care about himself again. Give him his mother back. Give him integrity back. Give him honor back. Make him rich in all the things that money can buy beyond what he could have ever dreamed. And the angels go, hell no. 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 Do you know what he's been doing the last 2 years? He's been a pathologic liar all his life. He's one of the most selfish creatures we've ever met. He's capable of no good. Why in God's name should we save him? And I'll tell you what, man, every time I hear a new guy say, thanks, Ivan. I'm glad you're in my life, Ivan. That's what God knew. That's what God knew that those angels did. And when my sponsor, when Dave told me 7-8 years ago, there's something in you worth saving, kid. There's something in you worth saving. Every time I'm there for a new guy to start a new job. Or the first time the parents give him the keys to the house. And the first time he makes a bunch of money and doesn't blow it.
That's what God knew, man. I'm done. Thanks.
Thanks, Ivan. So let's give... It says for me to thank you, Ivan. So thank you, Ivan. That always makes me cry. Our last speaker is Alexis J. from Las Vegas. She will be reading page 89 and 95 to 97 from the Big Book. Hi, I'm Alexis. I'm an alcoholic.
Alexis.
Hi, Alexis. It's really...
Love you, Alexis. Lots and lots and lots. Whole bunches.
Thanks, you guys. That's really easy to follow up. Whatever. Why did I do that to myself? I'm going to break the rules. I love breaking rules. But Joanna is one of my best friends in the world. And her mom's name is Terry Lynn, and she's in the ICU right now. And so maybe we can have like a little moment of silence for her and pray that she gets better. All right, Terry Lynn, come home. start myself by crying. Anywho, so I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to read from the Big Book. I'm going to, as usual, do everything opposite. I'm going to start with 95. you'll be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they worked with you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as his banker or financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. If he is sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in an interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. If he thinks he can do the job some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common, and that if you would like, in any case, to be friendly. Let it go at that. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find some desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that had he continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. Suppose that you are making a second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available. If he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon if he prefers to consult someone else. He may be broke and homeless. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job or give him a little financial assistance. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days. But be sure to use your discretion. It's my favorite line there. be certain he will be welcomed by your family, and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that, and you only harm him. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assuming them. Helping others is the foundation of our recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips and police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash your furniture in your home or burn the mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, you will have to meet such conditions. And now I'm going to go to the first part of this. This is the first part of Chapter 7, Working with Others, by the way, you guys. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Yeah, that was a lot of reading. But I love those portions. And I love you, and I mean that. I love you. I know your heart. I know your soul. You know, no one knew me like that. And I know you. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm a hope-to-die drunk. I gotta check the time here. I'm a hope-to-die drunk. I'm one of those alcoholics. I was 10 or 11 years old, and I had been taking lots of Sudafed before we knew it was speed. I was that cool. I was a person that was so cool that it wasn't cool yet. You know? First time I overdosed on anything, it was a bottle of Advil. I was 3, and I told my mom, made me feel better, you know? So I'm just one of those kids, you know? I had such an empty soul. I was the most stressed out child I still have ever met. You think I'm high strung now, hell. You know, I had these brothers and sisters, and there were a lot of things that were happening in my house, and I couldn't have any feelings because that was going to be really scary, and bad things happened to them. You know, I love them so much, and I remember when I was a little girl, me and Mike hiding my brother Matt in the bathtub so he couldn't hear the noise. And so he wouldn't get hurt. And I was so scared. And I couldn't be, you know. And I had all these feelings inside right here. And I couldn't have them, you know. And so I'm about 10 or 11 years old. And I don't know why. I found alcohol. So I was a daily drunk at like 10 and 11. I was that kid in like junior high. I was really good at stuff, but I was that kid in junior high that had like a bottle in my locker. I was that weird kid. And I was popular, but I had this great secret. So I spent all my time lying and cheating and stealing and hiding. And you do that long enough when you're growing up and you become empty and soulless. The most important thing in my life, I'll never forget, you know, was alcohol. I'm like an old-fashioned drunk. I drink. That's what I do.
I drink, you know. Yeah, there's other stuff. That's great. Whatever. Yeah, I like the stuff that burns. Because it allows me to have that feeling, you know. And I hated myself so much. And I always wanted them to be okay. And I wanted to be okay. And I didn't know joy for at least a decade, you know. I knew shame. You know, sometimes in these rooms we glorify our use, and we make it out to be some, you know, oh, I was just a rock star, and I fell into a pile of cocaine and woke up in AA. And no, you were disgusting, and you were pathetic, and you took from the whole frickin' world, and you poisoned it. You know, if you're here, and you have the same disease I have, that's what I do. You know, and that's just how I'm written. That's what we have to do. I'm the type of alcoholic that if you tell me not to breathe, okay, I'm still going to have to breathe. You tell me not to drink, I still have to drink. There's not really a question about that. Like, that's just what I do. So anyhow, I'm 22 years old, and I got sober March 1st, 1997. And that's actually a lie. We don't know the real date, but we made that up. So now you know. And I had nothing. I lived on campus here, and I did my daily walk across the street trying to get run over because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't bear to kill myself because that would look really bad. It was before they had those crosswalks, and I'd called my big brother, and I wanted to do whatever he did, and I would have done anything he did, and I had no food. I was going to get kicked out of the dorms because I didn't really like to go to school. I had no car, and I had no idea what the heck you're doing. But let me tell you something. Let me back up. I grew up on Park Place. That's real. There's a street called Park Place. That's where I grew up. So I came to my first meeting, and I walked across the street, and it just so happened to be that AA was across the street. So that's kind of convenient if you don't have a car and you're a self-centered drunk because I probably wouldn't have gone to too many lengths, you know. I don't know. So I walked in this meeting. It was a 3 o'clock tea time group at the old meeting place, Tropicana, Maryland Parkway. And it was a bunch of guys, and they were smoking. I had a pink pager. They were all smoking. You could smoke in all the meetings then. And I'm the only girl, and they all have gray hair. And they knew I was new, obviously, probably from the shaking craziness. And they shared their stuff. And I felt their heart. I knew their heart. I knew their head. And what those guys did for me is they brought me to some other meetings and stuff. You know, they brought me all over town. They brought me to a group called the High and Dry Group. And there's these old Boston guys, and they didn't hold hands. And they all fed me. They would take me to, like, the golf banquet dinner, which is nice if you don't have a job and you don't have any food. It's funny when you have combat boots. you know, And my first sponsor called herself a river rat. Her name was Jennifer. Jennifer the river rat. And she brought me up to Laughlin. She paid for it all. And I did my first fourth and fifth step. And she always gave me cigarettes. And all those people did is the same things, you know. I don't care how you feel. I come from that deal. I really don't care how you feel. What are you doing? If you're my sponsee, I'm sorry. I don't give a fuck how you feel. What are your feet doing? Because you're feeling, I mean, if you're like me, I'm really selfish and self-centered. So I think about myself, and my feelings go from like this to, oh, and I can't even see the world, you know? I can see nothing. There's no other people there. There's just my feelings. And so I have to go, okay, hi, that's nice. Let's get to work. And especially when I was new, because there was no way when I was, let's dig up all this stuff. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the big book. This is why we're here. But before the big book, people were getting sober. So stop throwing the fucking big book at everyone, please. Take their hand and go get to work. You know, that's the truth. So what's happened for me is sobriety has been the most amazing gift ever. And yeah, you know, I went to college and I got a car and I got a house and I lost a house and I did all this crap. You know, whatever. But when I was 10 years sober, I had a him problem. We all have him or her problem. And he fell in love with someone else.
And we had planned our lives. We were going to buy a house in this state and buy a house in this state and then rent those out. We were going to be able to go do our thing. We had even done our financial plans were balanced. Our stock market plans were balanced, I swear to God. So he fell in love with someone else, and I was heartbroken, and I was really mad at AA. I was like, why did I do all this stuff? Why did I get sober? I didn't get my prize. And my sponsor one more time was like, all right, what did you learn when you were new? Where's your bootstraps, girl? And I got to do a lot of inventories, and I got to look at all that stuff, and I don't think I would have been able to get to the other side without doing that, but I don't think I would have been able to survive if it wasn't for you. You know? I'm a hope to die drunk. And I can look at you, and if I hear you and see you, and you say you're an alcoholic like I am, I believe in you. Because there's no way I had a chance. And if you think there's no way you have a chance, I'm here. You know? It's true. So who cares? You know, whatever all this, you know, the big gold shiny stars are not big gold shiny stars anymore. My big gold shiny stars are you. But I get to be part of this. But even the fact that just witnessing this, I just get to witness it even. So I was sponsoring this girl named Brandy. Brandy was 16 and just such a little light, you know. And I remember her asking me, how is it going to be possible at her age? And I was like, I don't know. My brother's sober. I don't know. And so I took her, you know, through the steps. And then she had to move to Colorado in this little tiny dinky town. And so she moves to Colorado, and this was, you know, somewhat after my 10-year heartbreak mark, and she was, you know, part of that recovery for me. And I had this friend I went to high school with, and we're all total alcoholics. You know, if you were my friend in high school, like my real friend, yeah, we were bad. And I ran into him like a year ago maybe at a meeting in Minneapolis, and I'm like, wow, you're sober. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I met this girl. Her name's Brandy. She helps so many people. She helps so many women there. And my life has meaning. My life has a purpose. And it's not always, you know, peaches and roses. You know, there are a lot of days I wake up and the community is like, hello, you are an alcoholic and you don't deserve anything and you're no good and da-da-da-da, and it's going. And I make my new girls call me every day and then they call me, you know. I'm sorry. I'm really glad that I make you guys do that. you know, and my girls call me. And I can name, you know, so many people in here. There was a few of us... I'm going to share this, and then I'm going to be quiet. There was a few of us years ago who decided to start a newcomers meeting. And I had seen a lot of newcomers kind of float on the edges and fly away, you know, because all of us that were sober a while were getting so great we had to hear each other talk. You know, there's newcomers in the room? Really? You know? And so we start this meeting, and my friend Robin and Kimberly and Robert, Chris McGarry. Oh, I'm not supposed to say last names, but whoops. So we start this meeting, and we name it Newcomers Rock. it was a place so, like, we could go and celebrate them and find them, you know? And, it, you know... If you're in service for a while, my sponsor just told me this. If you're in service for a while and you go do H&I and you go do Newcomers Rock, when you go there, you have to go somewhere after because you're tired. Because you got to fill back up. You know, so we go there And I can probably see 15 people in here who are my true friends who I found there. Did it just say that in this book? You know, on page 89? I swear to God it did. It's true. You know? That's what it said. The fellowship has grown up around me. But I got to sit in that room and witness that miracle. And it's kept me humble. There's a lot, you know, if you want somebody to take you down from a pedestal quick, ask a newcomer. They'll tell you the truth. It hurts. You know? I got to watch Ivan swear. Like, we used to count how many times Ivan was going to swear when he's talked. Seriously, it was like 40 and over. I swear to God. But I got to watch all this stuff. And what happened is, you know, I found God in you. I got to learn how to feel God in me. I get to be God's mouth, God's eyes, God's hands. And especially ladies, when you're out there tonight and you see this really cute chick who looks all together and she's so cute she might be able to steal your boyfriend, go shake her hand. Because she might be your best friend later. She might save your life. That fear inside of you can kill you. And, guys, I don't know what that thing is for guys, but I know that I'm speaking the truth for the women right now. You know? Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if all the guys look around and be like, that guy's hot. I don't want to be his friend. But I know us girls do that. And the thing is I don't know who taught me that. I don't know where I got that gift. I literally think I woke up one day after doing some inventories and was like, this is stopping me from having life. My pride and ego, my fears, all that. I'm so scared they may not like me. You know, I get really scared that you might not like me. For you girls, especially guys, whatever. But girls, you're gonna save my life, probably, you know. And I'm gonna feel that stuff that you feel with you, cause I feel that too. And I can't do that if I'm too scared to let you in my life. So today that Hope to Die Drunk gets to do this, and I'm very honored, and I'm glad I got to speak with you guys. It was an honor to speak with you both. All right. I love you. Thank you. Thank you, Alexis. We have about 15 minutes left, so I can pick on people to come up here and share on your 12-step experience, if you want. Anybody want to do that? Carrie. See, it's really crappy when you go to a meeting that your sponsor is chairing and you sit right in my direct line of vision.
Thanks, Jelly.
You're welcome, Carrie.
Carrie, alcoholic.
Hi, Carrie.
This is unexpected. Thank you so much for sharing, you guys. It was amazing. I was actually texting myself a line from AJ's share, so because anyone would forget it. But okay, so 12-step experience. I have worked with a few women in this program. I haven't gone all the way with anybody through their steps, not yet at least, and you know, I look forward to that stuff, but I don't know, just some of the friendships that I've made in here with some of the women, and men, you know, men too, but women especially, it's just like AJ was talking about, you know, when I came in here, I maybe had one girlfriend, you know, and like one really solid good friend, and I was afraid of other women, and you know, coming in here and being able to break down the walls like we do and really get down to the nitty gritty, I think, has opened me up to a lot of experiences and things that I just never thought I was even interested in, you know. And, I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy when you actually sit down with someone across the table and you get to share your experiences and they say, you know, things that you think you're completely off base and you're crazy and no one's ever experienced that before or whatever. You're all by yourself, you know, and that person across the table says, yeah, me too. It's amazing. It's so crazy. So I don't know. I don't know how much to say. I'm off base, but I'm just really glad to be here.
Huh? I said I surprised you.
I know you did. But I'm really glad to be here, and I'm really glad to share this experience with my friends and see my friends speak. Thanks for calling on me, Beth.
Take care.
Love you.
Thanks. Be back. Mitchell?
He had
everything to do with it.
Nothing to do with it.
Mitchell alcoholic.
Mitchell!
That was good, guys. It really was. Even you, Dad. No, I don't know. Just getting sober was really confusing for me for a really long time, and I just couldn't get the grasp of it, and I couldn't listen to anyone, and couldn't take any direction. And, it's like God put it in line this time, you know, with my sister, and we got a few other siblings that got sober in the same year, and God put a best friend in my life, you know, that we ran around and we did everything together. But what it really comes down to, I'm a little choked up just thinking about it, is that guy with the hat on right there, Brad. Outdoorsman. But like, really, if I don't see another person get sober in AA again, he was worth it, you know? And just going from like when Brad came in, he had the long hair and
remember that.
Had the skateboard hanging out of the backpack, and I remember I approached him in GVG one time, and man, I get really selfish and I don't want to go to meetings and I want to do other shit sometimes, and it's just like, man, if I don't go to that meeting that night, Brad's not in my life, you know. But for a while I was telling Ivan last night, you know, like the first few months I'd pick him up and take him to meetings and I didn't know if he was gonna fucking kill me or hug me, you know. He wouldn't talk, and you fast forward a few years and Brad and I worked together for a couple of years, and it's just one of my best friends. I've heard his fifth step, and when I was sitting in detox, you just never really imagine shit like that, you know. I think like, man, I'm gonna get a good job and a hot wife and a nice house and a car. And today, you know, 4.5 years later, stuff really means nothing. You know, I got real, genuine people in my life that I really care about. And, you know, I grew up in this town, and I rolled with a lot of people that I thought would be my boys forever. And, my family is right here in these rooms. So, you know, you guys actually struck a chord with me tonight. So thanks for speaking. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mitchell.
There's a cute little redhead back there that demanded it be a good panel. So, T? Demanded. I don't know if Tiana has ever demanded anything from you guys. It's, you just do it. There's no, I'll think about it. You just do
another
it.
Another control freak?
My name is Tiana, and I'm an alcoholic.
Tiana!
Hi. I did demand that this be a good panel, and don't you think it was? Yeah. that was big to me. James, we'll talk to you later. So, this 12-step work for me has been, I was about 2 years sober. I went around saying I didn't want to get a sponsee. I was pretty closed-minded to that because I was terrified to take somebody else through, because we think that we don't know this enough, You know, I had to pick a sponsor that had 21 years sober because I thought she might know more than somebody with 5 years. You know, and so I thought I didn't have anything to offer somebody else. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. What if I ruin their lives? You know, what if I say the wrong thing and they go back out? Those are real fears that we have, and I talk with my sponsees about them now because they say the same thing to me. They say, I don't feel like I can fix somebody. And I just tell them, it's not your place to fix somebody. You know, all you can do is tell them what you did. All you can do is say how you're feeling right now, even though some of these people don't like feelings. I say, how are you feeling right now, and how'd you get there? You know, because for a long time I did. I felt like a piece of shit. I felt like I wasn't good enough. And, you know, sooner or later we earn that self-respect back. We get some self-worth back. And we have purpose. We have meaning. I'm getting really nervous talking up here. I hate speaking in front of people. What I tell them is just, you know, you just share that experience and you just try your best, you know, and it doesn't matter if they stay. It doesn't matter if they go back out. It matters what you're doing, you know, and that's the kind of work that every time I feel like shit, somebody calls me and then I'm not thinking about me, like Ivan was saying. My problems don't become important anymore, you know. That's about it. Thanks.
Okay, so Gina's not in here, but I didn't want to do this because I'm stuck in me because stuff, and I'm really, really glad that I did. So there's no host people in here, but thanks Wacky Paw for allowing me to be of service and share this. What'd you say? Oh, okay, great. Let's thank our speakers again, Keith, Alexis, and Ivan. And Chris C. from Tucson will now read A Vision for You from pages 151 to 153 of the Big Book.
I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Chris.
Hi, Chris.
A Vision for You.
Lots and lots. Whole bunches.
Thank you very much. A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come, if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Chris. So thank everybody for coming, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer.